Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bulls Beat Podcast Show, the Chicago Bulls Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bulls Beat Bulls fans. Doug Jonas here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls, and Zach LaVine is back. So that was probably the biggest thing that happened, you know, recently in the past week. In the last podcast, we got to see the long-awaited return of Zach LaVine. I've been very skeptical of how well Zach LaVine would play. I always get a little nervous with, you know, athletic players, or really any player, honestly, that tears an ACL. I know people say the ACL isn't the death note that it used to be, but I still see like a pretty good chunk of players who tear an ACL never really returning back and playing very well. The nice thing about LaVine, even though he's a super athletic player, he doesn't play with super athleticism. I guess that's good and bad. The good thing about that is we saw Zach LaVine, and in one game back, he pretty much looked like you would expect Zach LaVine to look. Now, I didn't watch Zach LaVine play a whole ton prior to the injury. I didn't watch the Minnesota Timberwolves all the time. But Zach LaVine looked like what his stats would suggest he normally looks like. He was a guy who shot some threes. He scored efficiently. You know, he looked good offensively. Looks pretty hopelessly lost defensively a lot of the time, though. The Pistons weren't really going at him defensively, so the fact that he maybe didn't look so good defensively was pretty much completely irrelevant in this game. But just watching him move around the floor, he didn't look like he was really in the right spot in the scheme several times, and caused a few baskets to go in for the Pistons. But either way, that is kind of what Zach's reputation was prior to coming to Chicago, and he fulfilled that. So now the question will be, is Zach LaVine going to be a difference maker for Chicago going forward? And we'll have to wait and see. He obviously had a very good shooting game, 3-of-4 from the three-point line, had a really nice step-back mid-range jumper as well early when he went 2-for-2, a second shot. So it looks pretty solid so far. We'll see how it goes. Obviously, 75% shooting from the three-point line isn't something he's going to maintain, but Zach LaVine does look like he's pretty much ready to go. His shots look pretty impressive overall. Really nice release speed. You know, he's coming off screens, doing step backs with his shots. And so overall, his offense looked pretty strong, and someone who's going to space the court more and really add some room for the Chicago Bulls. I think he's actually going to be a pretty big upgrade to the team. I know I said earlier I thought there's some chance this team was actually going to play a little bit worse with Zach LaVine than it would when he came back than it would prior to him being here, just because players have to adjust to new roles. You often see that type of thing. But right now, if Zach LaVine can continue this level of play, that's definitely not going to be true. And that leaves the Bulls in a weird position, really. We've talked a lot about how this team should possibly be tanking, how they should be looking to lose games and, you know, just get that draft position. And if LaVine continues to play pretty well like this, that's going to be really tough, especially if Nikola Mirotic is not traded, you know, as soon as possible, which does not look like it's going to happen, right? Because if there was a deal set for the 15th, this was the last game prior to the 15th, prior to him being traded. If there was a deal set for that, Nikola Mirotic was not going to suit up in this game. And so it doesn't look like there's a deal set. You know, there's obviously been rumors with him with Utah, the rumors with the Pistons, and there was rumors with one other team. I can't remember. I think it was Portland was the other team that was rumored. And I'm sure there's other teams that are in the mix. And we'll see what happens, but it doesn't look like anything is imminent, because if something was imminent, then we would have seen something go down. Nikola Mirotic still pretty much amazes me whenever he's shooting threes. You know, he ended up with only an okay percentage last night after being very hot early from the three-point line. Still, actually, very solid overall. But, you know, the first few threes he hit were just like these incredible threes, you know, where he's just like a guy in his face, rises up immediately in deep coverage, and just throws up that shot, and it goes down anyway. And I think that is just really impressive, the way Mirotic's shooting has gone this year, obviously. So he was 4-of-9 from the three-point line. And then looking at Lowry, who started off really hot, 3-of-3 from the three-point line, but then he finishes 4-of-7, which is still excellent. You know, I'm not trying to say that it's not excellent, but, you know, this show he was 1-of-3 for the rest of the way after that. And one thing about Lowry, watching him recently, is he seems to really be a pretty strong first quarter player. And you see the Bulls offense the last few games, really nice in the first quarter generally. But he's faded down the stretch a lot. So like again, that Knicks game as well, even though the Bulls won that game, You know, Lowry was really poor in the fourth and overtime, just was not making shots. I think he only had like 2 points or something like that, you know, towards the end of the game. And this was another game where like he was giving you a lot, but a lot of what he was giving you was like very early in the game, and he wasn't giving you much later. And, you know, that's something that'll probably come with age. Not a big concern right now, but it's just something that is out there, at least in what I've seen recently, is he seems to be much better early than late. And I wonder if that's a little bit of a conditioning thing, or if it's just a nerves thing, or if it's just, hey, this is just a small sample that I've really noticed it. So just kind of an irrelevant thing that isn't even a thing, but just something that happened for a couple games and has no meaning. Probably that is the most likely case, but something to keep an eye on in the future. So the Chicago Bulls at 16-27 now, they're not really in this prime tanking range anymore, right? Like it's they're not in this top five. They've moved pretty far away from that. They've now got, it looks like, six teams who have fewer than 16 wins. There are three other teams with 16 wins. So you're like right on the cusp, and then there's Utah who's got 17 wins. And so one of the things we're talking about trading Mirotić to Utah, and Utah is probably also looking at a decision right now, like, hey, do we want to try to win, or maybe we should get involved in this tanking thing? You know, there's like six teams basically that are within a couple games in the win column of us. Maybe we should be trying to get bad rather than trying to get better. And, you know, the Bulls are looking for a pick, and they're not looking to take any salary back. The way Mirotić has played this year, you know, he certainly deserves at least that type of return. There's some Bulls fans who are expecting to get, you know, a return as if Mirotić is a star player because he's playing like a star player. That's definitely not going to happen. As I know before, the best the Bulls can hope for is some type of first-round draft pick and no salary coming back. And you're probably not going to get a great draft pick just because the teams that are going to want to deal with you are not going to have, you know, good draft picks available. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with Mirotić. I think it's going to be a really nice deal for whoever trades for him. Assuming they can lock him up next year and assuming Mirotić continues to play at this level, it's going to be an absolute steal. Now, there's obviously some risk there that you're not going to be able to lock him up in his next contract, or that you're going to have to pay him a lot more than you want to, or that he's going to regress from his current extremely high level of play. But I don't know. I mean, this has been a pretty long stretch now of seeing him shoot just completely lights out. And this was a guy we thought would be a lights out shooter. He's a guy who has good height advantage and can shoot over people. And he's displaying all of those things. I also have been kind of paying attention more recently, and I think Mirotić is one of the better defenders on the team, actually. He's not maybe a great defender. He's not someone who's super athletic. He's going to be a lockdown guy. But he does play within the scheme better than a lot of guys on the team. And he's not someone who frequently breaks the scheme and causes you trouble defensively. And speaking of defense overall, looking at the Bulls, I feel like that's a pretty big issue for this team. And it isn't surprising. You got so many young guys on the team, guys. But you see overall individually, I don't know if there's huge flaws, but you see the scheme overall just like breaks down. And one of the things I'm going to try and do over the next few games is really go back and watch and try and see who are the people that are causing the scheme to break down. From what I've, you know, gleaned a lot recently, Markkanen is definitely one of the guys who causes the scheme to break down. Levine last night caused the scheme to break down. But I think there's a lot of guys at fault, and probably the thing is you just have too many young guys who aren't disciplined enough yet defensively for things to work out. I think the team probably has enough athleticism. You know, on the wings, you've got Dunn and you've got Nwaba, who are definitely athletic enough to play solid defense and do a good job out there. But just the overall impact, it doesn't seem so great a lot of times for me watching the Bulls play defense. And, you know, it's probably fine, especially while I'm not rooting for them to win games. I'd probably love for them to have poor defense and strong offense, thinking that the defense a lot of times can be fixed with scheme and effort and coaching. And offense really needs to be fixed by getting better players, you know, a lot of the times. And so, you know, that's how things are going right now. One other thing I want to talk about was Chris Dunn. And so Chris Dunn was someone, you know, when I first started really watching the team again, I thought this guy has really great potential. And, you know, I've watched another dozen games since then, or however many, and watching him some more. And I think probably I was a little overexcited initially. The one thing I think with Chris Dunn I've seen recently is he's played a little bit more under control. And I think he actually needs to almost get a little more out of control, play with a little more athleticism, try and play more like a runaway freight train. And when he's doing that, I think he creates this tremendous impact on the game. But sometimes, you know, he starts like walking the ball up, and then I think his impact is a little bit less, and the pressure he applies is a little bit less. The other thing is the Bulls are really putting together a team, and I don't know that they're doing this on purpose, that fits really well for a guy like Chris Dunn to be there. when you have Lauri Markkanen on there, and you have, like, I think will be a center in the long run, you have a center who's just a tremendous three-point shooter who can shoot over guys. And then if you look at a guy like Bobby Portis, who also is going to be a solid shooter from the three-point line, and maybe he's playing power forward, or maybe Portis is at center and Markkanen is at power forward. Either way, I think you can play those two guys together in the long run, or with Mirotić, doesn't matter. At least for the moment, you have those three guys out there. You're going to have two big men who are both, somewhere between good and great shooting at threes. You know, Portis maybe being, pretty good. Mirotić and Markkanen probably trending towards great as their careers move on. And then now you've got Levine on the wing, who's an excellent three-point shooter as well. And so you pick up a shooting guard who's going to shoot threes as well. Now you can throw Dunn out there with four shooters. And the fact that he can't really shoot no longer poses, this huge problem that it might for a lot of other teams. And so I think that's an interesting thing. And that Dunn, I think, probably situationally has a lot of value towards what it looks like the type of team the Bulls will have, and probably not a lot of value towards the rest of the league, which is fine for us because he'll be on our team. And, it definitely looks like the Bulls will be trending towards a high three-point shooting attempt team with very good shooters at all positions. So we'll be able to capitalize on that value. But I do think he's going to be kind of a niche player with his star qualities, and he still needs to make a lot of improvements. The turnovers are definitely a problem for Chris Dunn, and the shooting efficiency is definitely still a problem for Chris Dunn. He did have a pretty nice game last night, but he's definitely had some issues with his shooting efficiency overall, and has not been a guy who's been able to really make steady improvements in that area throughout the year. And that's something we're gonna have to look at. I think it's okay given how many minutes he's played that his shooting efficiency isn't so great. He's up at 43.7% from the field, but his three-point percentage is really what is, holding him back, the fact that he can't shoot threes. And like we know, it's not terrible that the guy is not the best three-point shooter. I do think where he has the ability to really improve things is by getting to the free throw line. He's a guy who drives a lot, plays athletically, but kind of similar to Derrick Rose in his rookie year, drives to avoid contact. And for a guy who plays as athletically and has as much strength as Chris Dunn, his foul draw rate is really just really low. This is a guy who should be looking to draw a lot more fouls. And I think that's the one thing Chris Dunn can do that will step up his game, get that true shooting percentage back up to, 53, 54%. And I think if he can get around that number, that he's going to be a very dynamic player. And right now he's at like 48.8%. I think that's just, it's too low, and he's got a lot of other strengths, but he's got to get that number up. He's got to be able to find ways to find efficiency. It's going to come in one of two ways. He's either going to hit free throws, which will improve it quite a bit, or he's going to start hitting threes. And looking at him, I don't know, his form's not terrible, but I mean, he's not a great shooter, so I don't necessarily see him becoming a three-point shooter. Kind of reminds me of a little bit of a Derrick Rose in that sense of he's got a pretty good mid-range shot. He can hit some step backs. He can do some turnarounds. He can do a lot of stuff from mid-range. But you move him out to a three-point line, and that consistency goes way down. And for guys who are good mid-range shooters, sometimes hitting threes is very difficult because, the arc and the trajectory that you throw the ball and all those things are very different from mid-range than they are from the three-point line. And so sometimes as you try to move your shot back, you actually lose that mid-range skill, unless you're just one of these guys who's just a really, really great shooter overall. But if you're someone who's kind of like a middling shooter and you're not an amazing shooter, sometimes developing kind of two totally different sets of muscle memory for like the mid-range shot and the long-range shot, it can be pretty difficult. You need to start putting a lot more arc on the ball for that three-point shot and things like that. So maybe Dunn can stay where he's at shooting-wise, and maybe it's not so important to improve that three-point shot so much if it's going to screw up his mid-range game, which I think plays pretty well with him as a driving player and a force in the league, even though I'm not a fan of the mid-range shot in general. I don't think anyone in the NBA is these days. But with his game of driving in and doing a lot of stuff, he's going to be able to get a lot of looks in that range. And Dunn tends to take closer mid-range shots than a lot of guys. He's not taking like 20-footers. He's usually taking like 12 to 15-footers, which are not nearly so bad as guys who are taking these shots one step in from the three-point line. So we'll see how things go with Dunn, but I do think that'll be something we continue to watch throughout the year. Now, I've used the comparison of Russell Westbrook before. If you look at the total number of minutes played compared to Westbrook, he's probably pretty similar in where he is at with his true shooting percentage where Westbrook was at the same period of time. That said, he's doing it 3 years older, which is not very encouraging in terms of development and growth. Usually you're going to grow a lot you know, in your first couple of years in the league, but also based on the number of years you've played in the league, or years of age that you are, sorry. So done from a years in the league perspective seems like a lot of growth, but done from a age perspective seems like, you know, he may be peaking out in another year or two. So we'll have to just see how things go with Chris Dunn moving forward. But I will say earlier when I thought maybe market and ceiling was lower than Chris Dunn's, you know, another couple weeks of watching them Bulls and marketing has really impressed me even more. It's interesting to try and put a ceiling on this guy. I think watching him, and I thought the matchup with Kristaps Porzingis was interesting because they're two guys you would compare a lot. They're both guys who are maybe stereotyped in the draft as being, you know, tall, white, stiffs who can shoot. And so watching Lowry and watching Porzingis, and, you know, Kristaps is in an interesting place because he's the number one option on his team. He's scoring a ton of points. His true shooting percentage and his efficiency really isn't all that great right now. Now, we'll see where Porzingis lands in the next few years, if he is able to make some improvements there, if it's just the amount of attention he's getting, if it's not having enough help around him, enough other offensive forces to play with him that force him into this role of taking kind of shots. And, you know, when you're scoring so many points a game, it's tougher and tougher to keep your efficiency up. You know, the more points you score, the harder it is to do so efficiently. And so Kristaps has got a huge amount of pressure on him to score. He's the number one option. Markkanen, you know, I don't know if he's really the Bulls' number one option right now. You know, from a points per game perspective, he's second to Mirotić, but they don't share the floor that much. So you could maybe argue that Markkanen is the number one option when he's out on the floor. But really, when I think of Lowry and his points per minute, you know, he's not really throwing up points at a rate that is, you know, just so exceptional where they're counting on him to shoot. He's getting a lot of open threes where he's just getting a kick out and taking an open shot. You know, he's not yet in a position where we're counting on him to act like the number one option, to create shots, you know, to bail the Bulls out when they don't get a good look and things like that. And so his efficiency right now is pretty nice, and I think we actually should see some improvement because I think his three-point percentage can actually rise above its current 37%. It's been trending up now for a few games after he had, you know, really nice, you know, three-point shooting games the last couple. But he's a guy, I think, who could get over 40%, you know, in his career as a three-point shooter. He's obviously a really amazing college shooter. And so we'll have to see, does Lowry make the next step to be a guy who can become an offensive creator? We've definitely seen he's quick enough to get to the rim. You know, he can make a couple good moves on some fakes. You know, actually, you want to see him adapt to some of Mirotić's moves and actually learn from Mirotić and play kind of in a similar style where he can get to the rim a little bit more. He can sometimes even create a little bit out of the post. You know, so we're going to have to wait to see what marketing can bring to the table. But if he can continue shooting so well and maybe even find some improvements, and then he can also add a little bit more to his creation, then Lowry has number one option type potential. And so I think that's pretty obvious, and we'll have to wait to see how high he can build that potential. But if he can start shooting over guys, similar to what like Mirotić was doing with a couple of his threes last game, rather than just hitting, you know, these kind of kick-out open threes, and if he can start getting a little bit more in the rest of his all-around game going, this is a guy who could maybe be like the next Dirk Nowitzki. And I know that's like one of those things, maybe it's a bad comparison because you're always comparing the tall white guy to another tall white guy, but I can't really think of another player who's been, you know, in that mold of just, you know, tremendous, you know, big shooting guy. And we'll have to wait to see. I mean, Dirk has set the standard for that role, and maybe Lowry is the next guy like that. You know, I think Dirk, Kristaps, and Lowry are maybe on an island themselves as you know, like really tall, you know, guys who could play power forward slash center and just shoot the ball from all over the court. Now, Kristaps has kind of shown he can take on the number one option role. Lowry, I still think, needs to make that jump. But watching those two guys head up and play off each other in that game, you know, you kind of felt like, I mean, besides Lowry having the better game and really having one of the best games of his career, maybe the best game of his career that night, you really did see that Lowry has some pretty serious potential. And so I may have underestimated his floor. Maybe this guy does have, or underestimated his ceiling, maybe this guy does have top five potential after all. Maybe this guy is the superstar the Bulls are going to build around. So we'll have to wait and see how that goes. But I'm pretty excited about the development. I think having Levine on the court is actually going to make things much easier for Lowry because Levine is another really pretty deadly offensive player and shooter who can besides shooting threes, if you just leave him alone and you have to rush out at his three because you gave him two steps, he can then, you know, take two dribbles, hit a mid-range two. He can, you know, try and get to the basket. He can do some other stuff. He's not just like a spot-up shooter, but he's a guy who's a dangerous shooter. And I think that's really going to open up the floor and give teams a little bit more trouble. And I think this Bulls offense actually has some units right now that could be really terrifying for teams to defend. If you threw Chris Dunn, Nikola Mirotic, Lauri Markkanen, and Zach LaVine out there on the same time, this is a set of offense that really would be pretty tough to defend. And I guess you'd maybe throw Justin Holiday as your last guy out there. And you got four guys who are going to shoot the three ball pretty well. All of them can also do other stuff. They're not spot-up shooters when they get the ball. So it's really difficult. And you got Chris Dunn, who's just going to play really athletically and drive and make things happen. I think that team could actually have a pretty strong offense. And so we're going to have to start thinking, is this a team really where the Bulls are going to make a run towards the playoffs, or is this a team where they're going to tank? And if they don't trade Mirotić really soon, it looks like a team that is actually trending towards the playoffs. So right now, the Bulls are 9 games under .500. At one point, they were 3-20, and they were 17 games under .500. So they've played 8 games over .500 after that point. And if you start projecting what they've done since that 3-20 start and Nikola Mirotić came back, this is a team that's probably going to finish the season, you know, close to .500. I mean, so now what are you going to do? You know, you're actually in the playoff race if you continue how things are. And so the Bulls will have to make some decisions. They either need to find a way to get a lot worse. And just seeing LaVine, even for one game, I kind of wonder if they have that in them. I kind of wonder, do they have it in them to get a lot worse? Or is this a team that really doesn't have a lot worse on the table? Because even if you move Mirotić now, LaVine is going to take over that role as a guy who can score a lot of points, who can be an offensive threat, who can provide spacing and all these other things. The Bulls just might be too good to tank. They might already be kind of in the middle of where they thought they would be. And so we'll have to see. I've been kind of a fan of trying to get that pick, but you know, you've got to get aggressively bad really fast here. And I just don't think that's going to happen. I think if you trade Lopez and you trade Mirotić, then maybe you have a chance, and not because Lopez is so great and Mirotić is so great necessarily, but I mean, you just trade two quality big men, and I think you have a chance. If Felicio has to start playing a lot of minutes, I think that's going to help a lot. And maybe you're one injury away as well from, you know, losing a guy for like say 3 weeks or 4 weeks, and all of a sudden you're right there. But if the Bulls continue on as constructed, they're a playoff team. I mean, I know they're a bit away right now, but they're a playoff team. Then so it's the Bulls management will have to start deciding. Maybe at some point they decide, you know what, we'll take the playoffs. We'll re-up with Mirotić for another year next year. We'll see how things go. We don't think a mid-first-round pick is really so exciting. And I think if you're a Bulls fan, a mid-first-round pick should be exciting. If you look at the guys this team has drafted, I'm going to try and roll them all off the top of my head. If you look at the guys this team has drafted, not in the lottery, I think it was Thabo Sefolosha, Tony Snell, James Johnson, Bobby Portis, Jimmy Butler, Nikola Mirotić, Denzel Valentine, and who else? Marquise Teague was the one guy they missed on. Taj Gibson. Yeah, maybe that's it. Doug McDermott was actually a lotto pick. He was pick 12. But of those guys, pretty much all of them, even Denzel Valentine in the second season now, are trending towards, you know, rotation caliber players or better. All those guys, except for the guys who've yet to be offered extensions, have gotten, you know, big extensions and stuck in the league for a long time. You know, probably Thabo Sefolosha and Tony Snell were like the worst of those guys outside of Teague, who's picked at the very end of the draft. And, you know, the Bulls took a flyer on him, and they even said, like, well, we didn't really scout this guy much because we didn't think he'd be there. And so they just took a flyer on his athleticism and his hype going into school, and it didn't turn out. But when the Bulls scout a guy, they do pretty well in the draft. This is a team that should be, like, loading up on mid-first-round picks because they really make them count. They have very few misses. They do an outstanding job of those guys. You got exceptional value, exceptional value several times. I mean, Butler is one of the best picks ever in a draft. Mirotić looks like an extremely good pick. Now, there was contractual reasons why other teams passed on him. He would have probably been taken a good 5, 6 spots, 7 spots. Some people even said lottery had he not been a guy who's going to have to sit out for 3 or 4 years. And then Taj Gibson, obviously, was a tremendous pick. Bobby Portis now is also trending into a tremendous pick. And then you got guys like Snell and Thabo Sefolosha, who were maybe not tremendous picks, but they definitely represented solid value, good value. They were probably, if you redrafted, they probably would have gone higher than where the Bulls took them. So the Bulls in general have done really, really well in the draft, which I've mentioned before. This is a team that should love to get picks. It's one of the reasons they've actually gotten pretty good value out of second rounders, even though they almost always trade their second rounders. Like, this team has very few second round picks. But when they do have them, they actually get pretty good value and get guys who can play and make some type of contribution. It's actually frustrating to me how much they give up on their second rounders, given how well they've even done in the second round. You know, they found guys like Ashik, they found Chris Duhon, even Zipser has played some. Aaron Gray, who was picked like 50, you know, made an impact in the league for several years, even though he wasn't great. Like, they've been able to find guys who could at least be end of bench players, you know, in the second round. You know, guys who are like rotation or fringe rotation, and they've had like very few second round picks. Like, actually named probably like half of the second round picks they've actually made. And what has it been, like 14 years, 13 years? I think maybe 13 or 14 drafts that Paxton has been around for. And I think they probably have only made like 6 or 7, maybe 8 second round picks over that time. So the Bulls should definitely look at their strengths and say, we should be acquiring picks, not trading them. Either way, they may look at it and say, hey, a mid-first-round pick for Mirotić isn't so great relative to his value. Maybe we should try to work this thing out. Maybe this guy can be part of our core going forward, because it would be a pretty dangerous team. I've not been on that bandwagon. I've been on the tank bandwagon. But I'm just wondering if the tank is just, it's gone. Just wondering if we just need to accept the fact that this team is too good. You know, they're, like I said, they're 8 games over 500 since Mirotić came back. You're really going to have to make some aggressive tanking moves, like trading multiple players and just leaving the team with a gaping hole, because the guys, you're not going to trade a lot of the guys who are causing the wins. Like, you're not going to get rid of Dunn. You're not going to get rid of Markkanen. You're not going to get rid of Portis, most likely, though I'd be okay doing it, but I don't think you're going to get value for him. So you probably don't want to. You're not going to get rid of Levine. He's not created value so much yet, but it looks pretty likely that he will going forward. And so you're left with getting rid of Mirotić is definitely one of the guys giving the Bulls a huge lift. You're going to try to get rid of him for sure. You can get rid of Lopez, but you're only getting rid of him to tank. I mean, you're probably not going to get much back. Maybe you get a second rounder for Lopez. If you can get rid of Lopez, sure. Maybe getting those two guys helps you quite a bit, but I still think this team is probably a 500 team if you get rid of those two guys, and that's not enough to really push the needle. Maybe you could get rid of Justin Holiday as well, just to leave you with another hole because he's a capable player, and try and get Zipser more minutes. But I don't know. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to really find a way to lose games at this point. So maybe instead it's time to just start rooting for, hey, let's make the playoffs and let's show you know, the world, hey, look at this team. They made the playoffs with this group. You should come join us. We have a ton of cap room, and hope they get a star player to add to this team. That might be the more interesting scenario at this point in time. I'm kind of starting to move in that direction. Unless the Bulls can start finding some ways to go on a huge losing streak, which just doesn't look likely. And you don't want it to be likely in a way, right? You want these guys to play well and prove that they're good players, because that actually adds more value to the team in the future, especially if it looks like first, you know, top 5 pick is off the table. At this point, maybe it does. Anyway, that'll wrap it up for this edition of the Bulls Beat. I will look to talk to you guys next week. I'm going to try and do a podcast with Fred later. Get into a few of the topics that I wanted to hit today, but just kind of rambled on about everything that I did. But one of the things I'd like to talk about, Fred, is how the Bulls will use their cap space. You can look forward for that probably coming up in a couple days as well. And if not, we'll discuss what the Bulls should be doing with their cap room at the deadline next week.